Hello and welcome to the Fast Break Podcast. This is Aman Kidwai. I'm joined by Patrick Martin. We are only a couple of weeks into the offseason, but it has been an exciting one. We're going to talk about portal additions, high school recruiting, and much, much more. The Fast Break Podcast is now available on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Please do give us a like and subscribe if you're a fan of this podcast. That is the best way to make sure it keeps going. And that's why every single podcast in the world does one of these little disclaimer things at the beginning, including us starting now. So thank you all. We're excited to have you here and talk about the newest UConn Huskies. Patrick, starting with Liam McNeely. This offseason, the Huskies added Terrace Reed. That was the first addition. We talked about him last week's episode. And they've added two more guys that we're going to talk about in detail here, Liam McNeely, Aiden Mahaney. We'll start with McNeely, a high school recruit, top 10, ranked in the top 10 or 20 in the class, depending on your source. Pretty big deal. He's billed as an elite shooter with a high basketball IQ. Sounds a little bit familiar. I think he's someone who's going to contribute immediately. I think he's someone who, if he committed like 5 months ago, it would have been just like massive celebrations. At this point, UConn fans are celebrating quite a bit. You know, second NCAA tournament, a lot going on. But Patrick, thoughts and feelings after the commitment of Liam McNeely, five-star recruit from the class of 2024.
Mon, are you tired of winning yet? So much winning.
I'm not.
God, it does not get old. And I feel like there's just been this steady stream of dopamine that UConn fans have been hitting for the last 12 months. And there's no supply shortage. The demand is up there and the supply is there. It's beautiful. It's as robust as the U.S. economy. No, I'm not going to go there. Where I will go is when Cam Spencer committed last year, I tried so hard to make like Cammy crab cakes a thing or something to do with Maryland or like the lacrosse, you know, laser or something like that. I love the alliterations. I'm back. I'm running it back this year with three nicknames that I have compiled for the McNeely-Mahaney combination.
Okay.
You probably know where I'm going with this, and then we'll dive into the X's and O's. Mm-hmm. Two great Irish names, by the way, Liam McNeely and Aiden Mahaney. You add that in with Dan Hurley. So you got the Gaelic Gunners.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You got the McBallers, which
okay.
doesn't really fit because Mahaney doesn't have the Mick there, but you can work around with that. And here is where I think I struck gold. House of Pain.
Okay.
Which is known for the Jump Around song. And if you ever seen the music video, it is set in like the 1992 St. Patty's Day parade in New York. They're all wearing Celtics jerseys. You don't have to worry about that. But the three members of House of Pain are DJ Lethal, Danny Boy, and Everlast. Wow. And there is a lot to work with there. So do you want to name McNeely as DJ Lethal, Mahaney as Everlast? Obviously, Danny Boy goes to UConn's fearless leader. But that's really got some staying power, I think, going forward.
Yeah, huge, huge meme potential for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, you take the House of Pain poster and you put Dan Hurley's face on the guy and the other guys on those other guys. You know, as we learned this past year with some attempts to make nicknames happen, including your ill-fated crab case Cammy, my Cam Newton, remember, which is what I
went
to call the backcourt back then. We learned that, you know, nicknames have to really come naturally, and sometimes sometimes a guy just does not lend himself. For whatever reason, it's not bad or good. It's not that he has lots of personality or doesn't. You know, Cam Spencer just, he was, you know, Cam Spencer was just a, a, motherfucker in your face. I mean, that's what he was.
He transcended
He was the
nicknames.
nickname.
Yeah,
Yeah,
Cam
he
Spencer.
was the
It was
nickname.
like fucking Cam Spencer.
Yeah, and even Alex Caravan was kind of like that. We talked about that a little bit. You know, like there's all these nicknames, Caravan, all sorts of things. But he's Alex Caravan. He's just a regular guy. He's a smooth customer, and he gets it done. So I think if we're just looking backwards on nicknames, to me, and this is not, I'm not changing the subject. We're going to talk about these new basketball players quick. To me, the best names we got, I like Haas for Hassan Diarra. We were calling him Hassan Diarra constantly, or Diarra. So I like Haas. I think that fits. We got it from Dan Hurley, so it's organic. Yeah, that was kind of my nickname highlight of 2024, if we're going through it.
Slamson was pretty good. I don't know where the
Slamson.
origins
Okay.
are, but when like 90% of your
Yeah.
field goals are dunks, it's just
Super cool.
it's organic as Whole Foods. So, no, let's dive into we'll go me
Liam
Mealy McNeely first. Okay, so I remember when IU got him, the buzz that it created because it was like, oh my God, IU finally did not step on a rake. Like they got an actual gamer, like they got a guy that can shoot. And I remember reading about him and checking out like a couple of minute clips here and there, and like, damn, this sounds like the perfect UConn dude. Like, what if Cam Spencer was 6'7", essentially, and a freshman? He's a mismatch nightmare, and in high school he was ran through every type of action that he will see in UConn's offense. He won't be Steph Castle, where he's this two-way nightmare that is eventually going to be a top five, maybe number one overall pick. But I definitely see him having like an Adama Sanogo as a freshman type impact, where you can just throw advanced shit at him right away. Like they were giving Adama post-ups, and he was going to work on the block from day one. I can see McNeely being put into the Cam Spencer type sets right away. His high school coach at Montverde, ran him through a ton of off-ball movement. He could be really good in a pick and roll with Jalen Stewart. You got 2 6'7" guys. You know, one is more inside emphasis than the other. Yeah, I mean the jets and the zooms, all these actions he's familiar with, and are so he can a plug and play type of person. I'm not saying he's going to lead the team in scoring and be a one and done. He could. You never know with how a player acclimates to Hurley's system. But people forget that, like, you know, Jordan Hawkins averaged 6 points per game as a freshman. Adama, as advanced as he was, only averaged 7 points per game. So if he can give you that like 8 9 points per game with a couple of threes, some plus rebounding, he's going to be an absolute weapon as a sophomore. And anything more than that means that UConn has punched above its weight and could be vaulted into this three-peat conversation. So even if he's more than that and he's a one and done guy, then you adjust your expectations from there and you really do start talking three-peat with a serious face.
Yeah, so right before committing, or right before his visit to UConn, McNeely won MVP for his team in the Jordan Brand Classic. Yeah, I mean, I think the expectation is, and he played at a really high level school, as you mentioned. I think the expectation is like Caravan's freshman year to be that kind of player. And I actually think in a lot of ways, he's Alex Caravan 2.0, right? He's a elite shooter, high IQ player, wing size, probably needs to be a little bit stronger to really compete at the next level, at his like position at the next level. But he could play what, the two through four, I assume right now. And again, if he's like the five-star recruit version of Alex Caravan, with all due respect, in the way, in very much the way that like Steph Castle was the five-star version of Andre Jackson, then that's super cool. Then that's what's happening with UConn, is we're seeing kind of these, like I said, 2.0 or advanced versions of different previous guys. There's probably an Adama Sanogo 2.0 coming from the high school recruiting
Terrace
in the
Reed, maybe.
future, or maybe Terrace Reed. But yeah, I mean, I think with McNeely, he's going to be a freshman, but he's almost as impactful as a transfer recruit in terms of what you expect from him immediately. And then I just think, in terms of the kind of a get that it is for UConn, you talk about winning. We're going to talk about how attractive UConn is as a recruiting destination. But look, shooting, to make a small analogy here, shooting skill, no matter what your offensive scheme or strategy is, if a guy can shoot, you want that. It's almost like the analogy I'm going to make is like in football recruiting, offensive linemen, right? Like no matter what scheme you run, you need big, fat, strong guys. So the same 300-pound athletic guys are all being recruited by every single school, and they all go to Alabama, Ohio State, and Georgia, to just, make it really, really simple. In this case, shooting is almost like that beefy athletic guy. You're a beefy athletic guy. If you're a great shooter in basketball, every single team wants that. All 340 teams want great shooting, and he has that. All I'm trying to get at here is that UConn is very clearly at the top of the pecking order in recruiting if they are getting possibly the best shooter in the freshman class. So I think that's amazing. That's something that obviously UConn was not getting to just be in 2018, 2019 on its team, and maybe why there were some early struggles. So after two straight championships, what I'm saying is Liam McNeely is an extremely strong sign that things are just going to get better and better. And that should be super scary for people, I think.
Yeah, and McNeely can look and see how Hurley handled a Castle, the highest, the burger boy, his first burger boy, and how Castle was able to be molded to like what the team needed. There were times he led the team in scoring. There's other times where he was a just attack the glass and lock up Devin Carter role. And in the same way, McNeely won't be asked to be like the primary playmaker from day one. They're not going to spread the court and say, hey, go get us a bailout bucket with 10 seconds left in the clock. The plug and play aspect, and you're going to hear that word a lot today from me, is so important because everything UConn does, its strength comes from continuity. So if you can just get guys in there that are running the same stuff, just tweaked and tailored a little bit depending on various attributes, then that's why you get, back-to-back championships. So yeah, I mean, couldn't be more stoked for that, and sets up potentially what maybe, looking at 2025, 3 straight years of nabbing a McDonald's All-American. And that's Jim Calhoun level stuff. That's Jim, Coach Cal level stuff of like, hey, there's always going to be a guy from UConn depending on who Hurley wants.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point about just how well Hurley and staff managed Castle and put him in a good situation to succeed. Like you said, not asking him to be the man from day one, really never asking him to be the man on the team. Nobody was asked to be the man on last year's UConn team. And that should bode really, really well for them in the future as they show that template to other recruits. And along those same lines, they went into the portal, as we've mentioned, they grabbed Terrace Reed, so they added some experience and strength and offensive skill to the front court. But then they went and added Aiden Mahaney, a 6'3" guard from St. Mary's. He's also a pretty good shooter from three. He was in the high 30s in his 2 years with the Gaels. He played against UConn in an NCAA tournament game, which is just funny, interesting. Certainly means that Hurley's very familiar with this guy's work, which I think is the best possible sign. And We can talk about it. Yeah, we can talk about it. Now they added him while they were also recruiting Kobe Brea, who ended up committing to Kentucky. And yeah, I mean, I think Mahaney is someone who's going to slot into a pretty prominent role here. Obviously, UConn loses both starters in the backcourt, so and he's a sophomore, rising junior, so he's got 2 years of eligibility left. Patrick, your thoughts on the addition of Aiden Mahaney to the Huskies?
I remember his freshman year. There was a ton of like college basketball buzz around this guy. He was like the it freshman. Like, oh my God, Aiden Mahaney. Like, there was this big matchup against Gonzaga. I remember where the two, had a showdown. I remember looking to my dad being like, damn, that kid's pretty good. And then so when they got matched up in the second round, yeah, the second round of 2023. Got to see a glimpse of him, and at that point, when there was no prospect of him joining, you kind of like, ah, this guy sucks. Andre Jackson locked him up and put him in a body bag, moving on. But that buzz never really translated from freshman to sophomore year, and for a variety of reasons. But St. Mary's is a great program. I'm going to say that off of the bat, but fun. And creativity sticks out and gets hammered at St. Mary's at that type of offense. It's West Coast Virginia. It's West Virginia. If
Oof.
you want to, I mean, there's a reason why he visited Virginia, probably as like a, all right, well, what if I just want to, do the exact same thing I did at St. Mary's just on the Atlantic seaboard? The shackles are off. Randy Bennett can't hurt you anymore. The bad man can't hurt you anymore. Be free, Aiden. And I think we're going to see a little bit of combination between like Tristan Newton and Cam Spencer as far as productivity. They're not going to be like they're he's such an interesting case because he's not anyone that really Hurley has recruited before. I mean, he had 231 threes last year, which is more than any UConn player. Despite playing seven fewer games, he's going to play a lot more off ball here at UConn. And so that will be an interesting development. And there are concerns about his athleticism and, his foot speed. Get him in the weight room. Big East play will be a little bit of a wake up call. But you have to respect a dude who comes from comes from the West Coast, and he's friends with Joey Calcaterra. I think they were on the same AAU team at one point. Any dude willing to fly across the country and play in stores is wired differently. Like, and the same goes for Jalen Stewart in that sense. But again, cost controlled. Like, UConn has him for 2 years. Brea might have been like more of what UConn needed right now in the moment, as far as like a 6'6" dude who's a lights out shooter. But you had him for 1 year. He was apparently asking for a lot, and there weren't enough attributes that could be molded into UConn's system. And I think Hurley and the staff took the long game approach with Mahaney of like, no, this guy. It might be a choppier fit to start, a la Tristan Newton, but in the long run, this is going to be the guy that once he figures it out, once that light turns on and he learns how to play a UConn way, he's going to be lights out.
Yeah, I mean, I think for, from the Hurley and UConn side, it's just they found someone they liked. They know that they'll be able to develop him. I think with him there's a few examples, right? There's Cam Spencer, and just the way he moved on from being maybe that kind of player to a more complete one. There's even Hassan Diarra, who came in and, really developed into a much more complete player over 2 years, and just a much smarter and better decision making player over the years, and build the team and develop a team around them. I mean, Mahaney is not going to be asked to be like the savior, which he almost kind of was at St. Mary's, which is like crazy. No one can be a savior there for a lot of different reasons, but certainly not a guy like him. At UConn, he's going to be asked to play a defined role, and I think it's going to suit him well. And again, the number one thing, like we've said, is just number one thing. If Dan Hurley and the staff want you, that's a really good sign for you as a basketball player. And then, yeah, I mean, we talked about this with Cam Spencer last year. He was down to UConn and Miami, right? You want to talk about, like, are you transferring for the lifestyle upgrade, or are you transferring because you love ball and you want the best possible situation for yourself? And by the way, no shade thrown your way if you're, if you're a basketball player at, San Diego or St. Mary's, and you want to take that 1 year or 2 years you have left and go to Arizona State or Florida State and have the time of your life for your remaining, college career. You want to be Bo Nix or whatever, go
Because,
do it.
there are multiple ways to get to the league. Everything we're talking about with UConn is one way to get to the league. But there is also a world where if you go to Arizona State, as your example, and jack up 15 shots a game and you're converting at an elite enough rate, you're going to get noticed. And you're going to be in Tempe, Arizona. So, like, that is a route that some people take. I think Hurley is now at peace with accepting people that want to take possibly the harder route that's like a higher ceiling potentially. Like that's an easy route. And it's cliche, but like, taking that route is still viable, but it's a little bit of an easier route as opposed to like, hey man, like you're gonna be in fucking Storrs, Connecticut. It's gonna be a grind, in the off season, but look at the potential reward. So just like a higher overall ceiling, I think, comes with like the shittier weather and the tougher expectations, I think, and maybe even the less shots.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is as good a time as any. Let's have the conversation. How the heck is this happening? Why is UConn so good? Why hasn't the recruiting succeeded so much? And it's something that came up in an article about Mahaney's recruitment. It has come up in an article I did with Cam Spencer's family about how he ended up choosing UConn. His dad said they have this culture of basketball junkies. They love basketball. They sat down with Cam and his older brother Pat, who's in the NBA, and they talked ball. And after that conversation, Cam and Pat, even though they liked the style at Miami, they thought it was a better fit for the pro game. They said 150% UConn. Because they were overjoyed by the kind of X's and O's conversations that they were having with Hurley and Luke Murray. We almost saw the exact same thing in the Aidan Mahaney article from, I believe, Joe Aruda at the Hartford Courant, who said that, Mahaney was so excited by the film session he had in Storrs. So it's like, to state glaringly obvious, so much has changed in the world of college sports. You have the transfer portal. You have to re-recruit your roster every year. You have NIL playing a role in your ability to attract and retain people. You have pro potential being a big factor in your ability to attract and retain people. And UConn hadn't been so great on that front. And then in all of these things, there are schools that are ahead of UConn, right? Like UConn is not the NIL monster. UConn is not the NBA factory. And so I really think that the way that, well, yeah, maybe they're about to be. The way that UConn is doing this, they've figured out that there's this, there's this piece. If you love ball, right? Like if you really truly love it, you're a basketball junkie. You also appreciate a different kind of basketball player, potentially. And you're also like really connecting with the Cam Spencers and Aidan Mahaneys and Steph Castles of the world, who are hyper competitive, ultra driven, no matter how talented they are. They're willing to play defense, which is a huge component of this formula here. And now UConn and Hurley have some real strong evidence for what they can do with this kind of talent, and even with upper echelon talent. They found a way to manage egos at a tremendous level. Asking Donovan Clingan to be a backup, like there's not a single team in the world that does that when they recruit a Donovan Clingan type player. And Let's get into this piece too. There's a possibility that Alex Caravan comes back, and that would mean less of a role for Liam McNeely. And I'll just tell you right now, Liam McNeely's not transferring out. If Alex Caravan returns, he's just gonna accept a slightly smaller role on a really good team, and the benefits that come. He probably loves ball too. He'll probably be stoked to play alongside Alex Caravan if that's his reality. So I just think this whole, there's so much to be explored and discussed about how the heck did we get here? Won two straight championships, now at the top of the mountain in recruiting and being able to get really anyone you want, but doing it without an advantage in resources, without an advantage in what your location is, or necessarily what your conference is. Like, I think the Big East is cool. Everyone in the country doesn't necessarily think that. And oh, by the way, all these SEC schools making 50 mil a year are just spending more on basketball than half or more of the Big East anyway, just for fun. So, despite the competitive landscape changing, I think it's so amazing the way UConn has positioned itself and loving basketball. I just want to end with that. Loving it. Something else matters. If you love the game, other people who love it are attracted to that. And that's paying massive, massive dividends for UConn, I think.
You really went down the leaderboard there.
Which leaderboard?
Oh, just like the leaderboard of everything. No, it was
Oh.
impressive. I was just letting you cook. It reminds me, I'm gonna pat myself on the back here. I think it was 2021 where I was talking about Hurley in the article I wrote can probably still be found. We'll have to repurpose it maybe and like do like a red ink editing of it because it was like Dan Hurley is locking down his backyard. And I was talking about like the Sonogos and the Hawkins and the Rasul Diggins of like everyone up in that, New England, Metro Atlantic quadrant. And I had even said, I was like, this is what you have to do first. And then you can start to play around and say, Liam McNeely from Texas, do you want to come? Aiden Mahaney from Cali, Jalen Stewart from Seattle. There's much more of a national representation with this current team, and that's because of the guys they were able to lock down from like a localized perspective. And now it's like look, they really had to use the Big East as a pitch Hurley's first couple of years to get the, hey, Jordan Hawkins, you're going to be lighting up the garden. That gets your foot in the door. Now that door is wide open, I think you're right. The Big East is less of a sales pitch now. Like, yeah, we're in the Big East. It's cool. We win it. We plan on winning it a lot. And now it's more of like we're becoming this, unprecedented juggernaut. And I want to go dive into a little bit of like what these transfers are bringing and how like the staff goes about their hang on 1 second. Sorry, we can cut that. How the staff goes about their off season and they go out with a shopping list and they're not hungry and they're not hungover. They're not restocking the pantry even when you have, shot creators back home. And I'm thinking of like Solo Ball and Jalen Stewart. They don't treat portaling as an arms race. The guys that they bring in aren't necessarily the highest profile names that top all of like the aggregator clickbait bullshit of like here, Jahnel Davis, top transfer. It's like here are the top five transfers and everything. But they all have some distinct ability, which you talked about, namely like loving basketball and being a junkie. There are so many of players that have come into UConn lately with a butt. Aiden Mahaney, really good, but he regressed as a sophomore. Terrace Reed, yeah, big, a lot of attributes, but Michigan stinks. Liam McNeely, great shooter, but the not elite athleticism that most Burger boys have. You can go back even further out. Tristan Newton. Oh yeah, he fills up a stat sheet, but he's too chill. He's not athletic enough. He won't fit with Hurley. Joey Calcaterra. Oh, he's just but he's just a white boy on the bench. Steph Castle, he's great, but he can't shoot. There are all these buts, and the staff makes it work. And next thing you know, all of those guys are vaulted up rankings and projections and NBA value and college basketball value and analytics. The UConn bump is becoming a thing. If you look at the athletics transfer rankings, Aidan Mahaney is 46th and Terrace Reed is 50th. How much do you want to bet that those guys are top 50 players on Evan Maya's BPM ratings at the end of next year? Newton, Calcaterra, Alleen, they were not high on transfer lists, but when they left, it was like, whoa, look at these guys. And that's what the anticipated bump I think we're going to get from Reed, Mahaney, and McNeely. And think about last summer when we got Cam Spencer, we're like, oh yeah, Cam Spencer provides some shooting that Hawkins is leaving with. And we were hoping he could replicate some of Jordan Hawkins's production, who was a lottery pick. And we had the same idea with Andre and Steph. Instead, those were proven to be upgrades, like you said. They polished off the weaknesses and said, okay, here you are. Here's the upgraded version, the upgraded software of this. And that means the evidence is mounting that it's less the players that are being brought in and more of like the system that these players are being filtered through. And you can now look at rosters as a fan list and be excited to say, okay, how do these holes get filled? And now this year there will be a lot more like slash replacements because it's not going to be as much of a like for like as it was from 23 to 24. But like the same sets that we saw Spencer and Newton make magic with, and Newton and Hawkins or Jackson and Hawkins prior, will now be Jalen Stewart and Solo Ball. And I think there's so much to be said about getting your freshmen to take almost like a Mahomes type. Like they got Mahomes last year, where they were essentially like sit, learn, and be defensive role players. And now, with a year in this UConn system, plus with the talent they have added, there is going to be this like, oh wow, where did Solo Ball come from? Meanwhile, like everyone that has been watching is saying, like, no, like this is like he was put in a place to succeed. And the same can apply for Jalen Stewart. I can't wait to see what the staff cooks up with this roster now that it's most likely finalized. Because I think they're going to be even more fluid than they were last year, especially on offense, because for as amazing as Steph Castle was, he was still not a plus shooter. It could be a lot more four out offenses that, Hurley talked about back in the day with this upcoming team. And regarding Caravan, we know that he had told or Hurley had told Andy Katz that it was looking like if he got a first round promise, he was gone. I'm treating this as he is gone. And everything I'm saying gets dialed up to 11 if Caravan is coming back. Like I'm approaching this without Caravan as like, oh yeah, we'll be pretty good. We'll be a top 10, top 15 team. And depending on how all these pieces mesh, they could be right there ready to make a run in like a lackluster Big East again and ready to make another Final Four run. If Caribbean comes back, that's an entirely different conversation and pod that we can have.
Yeah, I mean, I think to go back a little, yeah, the staff, they have proven themselves as elite identifiers of talent and elite developers of talent. So you don't always get both of those things, which is awesome. And then culturally, they've created this retention machine, and we were discussing how attractive that is to recruits right now today. Just as valuable is the job that they have done on the retention front this offseason. Keeping everyone, essentially everyone. Apostolos Roumoglou, best of luck in the journeys to come. Same for Andre Johnson. Both of those fellows are in the transfer portal. after making tremendous contributions as depth guys. But you know, they kept every major rotation player with eligibility that was not an NBA prospect. They kept them. And those guys don't even necessarily have a guarantee that they'll be a starter next year. None of those guys, I think, not even Hassan Diarra, has a guarantee that he'll be a starter next year. And with the additions of Mahaney and McNeely, that's competition for Solo and Stewie for playing time. So I think that's, you know, the best part is the iron sharpens iron aspect of that. But the bet on development that the staff is also making here with kind of their portal decisions, right? Like there's another staff, a different kind of staff who you could maybe see saying, okay, maybe can we upgrade this Jaden Ross position? Can we bring in a third guy? And maybe we do jettison someone, but it's okay because he's better. And I think Hurley and staff are very aware of the chemistry of the team and just the need to hang on to as many folks as possible. We also know from a tweet from Kevin Sweeney on Twitter, I believe of Sports Illustrated, a very good point that kind of in the future, you're not going to have as many transfer portal prospects. You're not going to have as many guys with the COVID year. And perhaps this may lead to a smaller overall pool in the transfer portal. So with that in mind, I think it's really great that, you know, again, McNeely comes in as a freshman, but Mahaney, Reed are coming in with multiple years of eligibility, and then the rest of the roster is so young. We haven't even talked about someone like Ahmad Noel, who is also a very, very exciting and very strong point guard prospect. But however good we think this team is going to be, the state of retention we know being really, really strong, it's not just going to be strong next year. It's probably going to be a really, really good team for the 25-26 year then.
Oh, I'm the second a futures comes out for 25-26. I'm sorry, Chloe. I'm putting the mortgage on it, because I am so bullish on the development of players. And look, I know every school or like every players do this, or most high level programs do this, but when McNeely, Mahaney, Reed all committed. You click on their little Instagram pictures and you see, because of algorithms, all of like the blue check players commenting right up front. And you have guys that are now going to be in direct competition with each other. Solo Ball being like, let's fucking go for Liam McNeely. You know, Samson Johnson being hyped for Terrace Reed. And I think the staff was very transparent with saying, like, we're not going to recruit over you. And I think that kept Jalen Stewart and Solo Ball away from all the kind of the portal prowlers. And freshmen that have like NBA potential, which I think Solo Ball and Jalen Stewart do, maybe
Absolutely.
even Jaylen Ross if he takes a leap, those are freshmen, or those freshmen are rookie NFL contracts. Where it's just like, you know, in the NFL, when, you know, Joe Burrow on his rookie deal, that was like, okay, this is when the Bengals have to go and make moves because he's so cheap now. Let's load up and let's go get Jesse Bates and everything like that. That is going to be like the cost control, because now this is, you know, money is involved. You know, you talked about Tom Moore being like the general manager here. Like, you have to treat this now with dollars and cents, and having talented freshmen that you believe in, that believe in the program, like Ball and Stewart, are the most valuable thing in college, or are about to be the most valuable thing in college basketball. And the fact that they are now given the program's the best program in college basketball's stamp of approval. You know, how hard are you going to go in the off season knowing that, like, it's like, wow, they believe in me. Like, they think we're next. They don't think we're just like, oh, potential. Like they see us as like they are depending on us as sophomores. And like you said, holy shit, looking at next year, when you think that potentially the only people leaving from that team are Hassan Diarra and Samson Johnson, and then you look at some of the five stars that UConn is linked to. I think one of them is Malik Thomas. There's another one local. I don't want to get too far into the weeds there, but really sets things up for sustained run. And I don't know, like three months ago, I looked at at this season as like, all right, the party's over, we're back down to reality. Like, here comes the hangover. There is no hangover. Like, Hurley has found a way to basically give fans liquid IV every offseason in the form of like very intriguing portal pieces or like that one timely five star that comes in. And I don't know. I mean, I wanted to talk a little bit about like his Hurley's media that he's done with like JJ Redick and Andy Katz a little bit. Should we go into that now? Because I think, like Hurley always talked about being a college basketball junkie. Like he comes from, family royalty in that regard. But like you said, a lot of that is just kind of like chin wagging until you actually prove it. And then you double down and prove it again by winning literally every possible thing you could win in this past year. And I think with that, and this isn't anything new, but like with that confidence comes a comfort level in just expanding upon how much of a junkie you are. You go back and listen to how he talks with JJ Redick about the different sets and how the staff are sitting there in their film sessions. He's watching, Luke Murray is coming in with a Turkish Super League highlight, and they and Hurley expanded on that with like, yeah, like, if we see something from like a D3 women's game, like we'll watch it. We don't care. Like anything to give us an edge. And I think in an era where there is a lot of artificial behavior, everyone says they're a college, everyone says they're a junkie of something. Like, oh, like I'm an NBA junkie. You watch a couple of NBA games a week. That's not junkie. Like, that's not a basketball junkie. Like, you need to be watching every different level. You need to be going to high school games. Like, truly, this staff are they are junkies. They are seekers. They are always looking for that next hit to give them an edge. And I think that's not appreciated enough of like, you'll have people, oh, I love soccer. If you just watch the EPL, you don't love soccer.
You
And
need more than that.
you have to like, the true junkies that I know are texting me players that I can't even pronounce of like, oh wow, his transfer value's gone up. And to have a coach like that that is able to like that has an infectious nature to a program where like wow, like those guys really love it. After listening to the Redick and Hurley, I found myself inspired of like, well, I want to be obsessed with something the way that they are. Any walk of life or any profession, like to approach it with that dedication and obsession has like a trickle-down effect. So then you have people coming in like, okay, yeah, like it's cool to be obsessed about things. I feel like, whether it be like, like kids, it's not cool to be like obsessed. I was like, oh,
Say
like,
it.
all right,
Say kids
nerd.
these days. Say kids these
Oh
days.
no, I didn't want to do it. No, because even it was like a thing like back when I was in high school.
Of
It's like,
course,
oh,
of
like
course. Yeah.
if you were obsessed with something, you're like, oh, loser. Like, wow, you care? Ew.
Yeah.
And Hurley is so vocal about being transparent. Like, this is who I am, flaws or not. Like, I am insane. Like, I am making crazy portal videos. Like, I love it this much. I truly don't care. And it just kind of gets rid of all this pretense of like, Yeah, like it's cool to care about this shit. It's cool to like get really into it and, you know, be watching random, you know, basketball clips from like a Swedish, you know, league or whatever. That's cool. It's fun, and the reward of that is the winning. And I feel like when you factor all of that in, it creates this level where we're having podcasts here on May 2nd talking about like, wow, like, yeah, they really do have a chance to win three national titles in a row.
Absolutely. That part is crazy. And yeah, I mean, I think there's so many we should just go in on all of the different ways that this is happening because we have to unpack how you got so good so quick. You know, like one thing that I tell to some of my friends who maybe follow sports but not UConn or college sports as closely, I tell them all the time, I was like, I was not even prepared for UConn to be this good because the signs were like, okay, they're gonna be good. But they are now approaching, you know, axis breaking dominant. Again, they're approaching UConn women's basketball 5, 6 years ago. They're doing it with a much deeper roster than a lot of college teams aim for. So I think, again, to compare to maybe previous teams that were really, really good, instead of that significance of top line talent, they've just have more talent from, you know, 1 through 8. Than a lot of other schools have had, or just guys who know and appreciate their roles. And yeah, I mean, that part about the offense and its sophistication, that's been super, super cool to watch. That is the, you know, like, am I really dreaming, pinch me moment about UConn basketball is that not only are they, you know, really great on the recruiting front and running a program and all of that, they've decided to also be leaders on the X's and O's front, really in college basketball. For a variety of reasons, college basketball, like schematically, had maybe been on a light decline, maybe because of the high turnover, guys jetting to the pros and all that stuff. Yep.
Coach Cal.
And yeah, guys like
It
Calipari
was
got the one and done.
the mercenary
Yeah.
level of roster building where it, which blew my mind because like they Kentucky didn't win anything.
Yeah,
But
neither did
that was
Duke.
like
Duke didn't win that much
neither
either when
did
they did it.
Duke. Like the teams that won, like look at what Villanova did from like 2016, 17, 18. Like that's a smaller sample size of what UConn's doing now, and they did that through everything UConn is doing right now, as far as like continuity, culture, a certain way to play. Like it boggles my mind how there are so many people out there that aren't readily copying what Villanova did, what UConn is doing right now. Like I guess Hurley copied it, but he didn't copy Villanova like for like. It was just like, why, like, what, why is everyone so afraid just to like do this?
I think some schools are going to start doing it, but two things. I'm guessing, guessing with a response for you. But I think that you have to be in a very unique place, a place where UConn was, where you're a high major, but you're not the top of the mountain of the high majors financially. You know, to make it financially and bag wise. You are not in the top of kind of you're not on the top of the mountain. And again, I think the other piece is you don't have the brains. You don't have the brain power. You don't have Dan Hurley, Tom Moore, Luke Murray, Kimani Young, and that brain trust together for 4+ years now and more to come. I think those are kind of the differences.
And also, you don't have, and I'm gonna dump on football here for a second. You don't have, you know, dipshit donors that want to see all these big names brought in because that lines their own pockets because people are tuning in to see all these big names play. And I think in reality, all of those football-based schools that are having college basketball dominance, they don't give two shits about the titles. They give a shit
Yeah.
about what the money brings in. And they realize that, like, oh, we can make the Final Four, and like Alabama, like that's their national championship right there, was making the Final Four. Like they got to where they needed to get,
Totally.
and that's enough for the boosters and the donors to get there.
Yeah, I mean, there was a sorry to like cite one random tweet. That's like one of my least favorite things to do personally, but There was one random tweet I saw from a Duke fan, actually, who was frustrated with his program. He's a fan, I think. Maybe it's a he, who knows? But the individual said, "I'm so sick and tired of this program. All they care about is how many points Jason Tatum scores on a Tuesday night in Sacramento, or how many Instagram impressions, a pregame post gets. And that's all this program is about right now." And that's exactly what you're saying. They don't, all they care about is what are the financial implications of what we do, and then marginally, like, winning means nothing to them. Follow-up anecdote about Dan Hurley. Okay. At this point, in the middle of this past season, Andrea Hurley was on a podcast doing an interview, his wife, and she shared a ton. She shared a lot of Dan's insecurities, Dan's, what his man cave is decorated like, some other things, some of the underwear stuff. And Dan Hurley's only reaction to, and a few things where she talks about, how intense he is, and how sometimes, hey, she tries to remind him it's just a game and take it, and literally the only reaction Dan Hurley had to her interview the next day was, "Yeah, it's not just a game." And that was the only thing he said. He didn't say, I was upset to hear all this conversation about my underwear. Did we need to get into that much detail about the, my weirdo room? All he said was, "It's not just a game." And that's what it is. It's that Dan Hurley didn't care that just making the Final Four 1 year after winning the national championship is an amazing season and you're done. And you can coast for a little while. Back in the day, you win one title, you win two titles, or you win a title in a Final Four, you coast, you rebuild a little, you let it, you take the time that you have, you have earned a grace period, so you take it. But he has no interest in that. Foot on the gas, not just a saying. And it's indicative of this mindset that we're talking about. That's been so fun to watch and see succeed.
Yeah, I definitely think whether subconsciously or not, Hurley saw a lane to promote his authenticity of like no one in college basketball is like who like he someone I think it was ESPN was like Dan Hurley now the poster boy of college basketball and I did a double take like wait what like this is Dan Hurley like the same guy that like. We were wondering if he could win an NCAA tournament game after Teddy Allen ripped his soul out. And like I think there was a vacuum in college basketball, maybe even college athletics in general, maybe even sports in general, for someone who approaches life, their craft, it with this authenticity. And it this is truly not like some slurp session where we're all just talking about how great he is, like it's more of marveling at the work that they're putting in and how this is like created something that I think has like galvanized a lot of Connecticut fans, even sports fans in general. I know who have like, man, I love watching him. It's like he brings joy. And I also think that he has this ability to like even when they lose it's like the blame is on himself it's like I didn't get the team when he talked about Seton Hall like I didn't have us ready for what Shaw was throwing at us Oregon's Creighton like I wasn't ready I didn't get my team ready for the environment and all of this adds up to like a type of person that like and I truly think like after, because we talked about how like the 2023 team was ahead of schedule, that like really, like if you put a truth serum in Hurley, it was probably like, I didn't think we were going to be that good. I was looking at 2024 as our like big banner breakthrough year with like Klingon as a sophomore and everything like that. Because that 2023 team was ahead of schedule. I think Hurley saw this opportunity in front of him, the staff as well, of like, holy shit, like this is a chance to completely change the paradigm of college basketball and sports in general. And this, you know, like, hey, like we're gonna have to be insane for 2 or 3 years, but the result is gonna be something that is like literally in the history books.
Yeah, and I think that the piece of it you were talking about before is where you can give the league some credit. Just like you said, it was something that Hurley was able to recruit off of in terms of like quality, upside. Look at Villanova, you know, in 2018, 19. Today it becomes, this is a league that's focused on basketball. We have 11 teams. We play a 10 team round robin. You've got 20 games. We have our basket, you know, we have our conference tournament at Madison Square Garden. And you know, again, back to my conversations with the Spencers, they talked about the style of Big East play being more conducive to development and you know, reaching the pro level compared to the Big Ten. So you know, there are some aspects where the league comes into play, and I think again, being basketball focused, being basketball centric, so huge. Quick note on the staff, we had been talking about some of the continuity there. There has been talk about Tom Moore moving into a GM style role. Obviously, with so much changing in the world of college basketball, you really need someone kind of year round on that. Personnel duties, we've seen it happening in football already. What we don't know is if Moore ends up moving into that GM role and they hire a younger coach, or if they hire a GM and Moore, you know, stays on anyway. But those guys, again, so crucial to the formula. And you know, for Dan Hurley, one thing I want to just add that I think is kind of interesting is this kind of trending bit on high school coaches succeeding in college basketball. It came up because of Nate Oates, who many of us would call, you know, another one of the best young coaches in college basketball right now. And he's also a former longtime high school coach. I actually think there's a lot of relevance to pointing out the high school coaching backgrounds of some of these guys. College basketball just is more like high school now. If a guy can change schools any year, you have to be a different kind of person. And again, college basketball in the one and done era maybe became about how good of a recruiter you are, how great of a recruiter you are. Maybe that is changing now. Maybe strategy does matter a lot more now. And that's a super, again, just very cool development. It's good for college basketball writ large. And Dan Hurley and UConn being at the forefront of that, amazing.
You spoke about how, like, you know, certain teams are adjusting, and as far as like, you know, like any sport at any level is a copycat league. You know, whoever is doing it best at the top teams are going to start to adjust. And I, you know, we were sitting here like, why isn't everybody doing this? It's starting. If you look at two rosters, for example, I'm going to give the way they've gone portaling Kentucky and Louisville. Did not go out and get the highest ranked dudes. Both with new coaches, both trying to reset and jumpstart blue blood programs. And look at the rosters they go out. They don't have like the highest ranked dudes. They have pieces of like, okay, these guys are going to be the, you know, these guys are good defenders. Okay, let's go get some shooting with Kobe Brea. Oh, Chucky Hepburn is kind of like your like connector piece. Like, they are approaching this with much more strategy than like the blind, like, oh, that guy's obviously the most talented. I'll make it work. And there's so much, I think, ego at fault to that of like, oh, I'll just make it work. Like, no, it's like you have to find people that fit you and fit the culture. And watch what happens with UK and Louisville, provided their batshit crazy fans don't lose their mind when it takes longer than usual. But like, if you are patient, like I think we're also forgetting how patient UConn fans and the program had to be to get to where they were. You know, they had to take their lumps. They had to get punched in the face against Maryland and against New Mexico State. They had to bring in guys that like, okay, didn't really fit. All right, whiffed here. Like, this is a process. This is why the better get us now because it's coming. Turned out to be so prescient is. It requ it's a multi-year thing. And as long as other programs like Kentucky and Louisville give these guys chances, you're going to see more of these types of programs. And you and I had the talk in the Slack about like looking back at our old takes in the past year of like, you know, like we nailed a lot of it, you know, snaps to that. But what we didn't expect was the team to be this good. And again, nobody did. And thinking, you know, I saw what you said and I thought about it for a little bit. Like, I don't think we expected like UConn to be this good, but we also didn't expect like the rest of college basketball just to get dog walked by UConn so much. And that's because programs aren't out there doing it the right way. Now, you know, fast forward between now and the next 5 years, one, UConn is going to be right where they are. I'll put all the chips in the pile on that. But I think they're going to start to see little types of UConn level programs with the way their culture is run, with the way they go about off seasons, popping up with like UK and U of L and maybe even North Carolina. And then sure enough, in 5 years, the college basketball game will be so much better than what it was. And I'm not afraid to say that like UConn saved college basketball in that sense, if all of that turns out to be true.
I think that is a very good point. I mean, a lot of my like my sports group chat, you know, fellas, a lot of them are like NBA only fans, and they think of only fans. But they're the NBA only, and they think of college basketball as, you know, like a lot of the way like a soccer fan thinks of college soccer. You know, they are like almost at that level of like dismissive about college basketball. And to be fair, they have the last 15 years of evidence to say like, all right, college basketball is hardly even producing the future NBA stars of tomorrow. And so why the heck do I even care? I think that's
You
a
watch it if
huge
you
piece
have
of it.
some you watch it if you have a vested fan interest. You're not watching for the actual aesthetic quality of it.
Yeah. So for that to change would be huge. I mean, I've talked about that where like I am very much on the brink of being like I'm a casual college basketball fan. And have been pushed even away from that by the diminishing quality that we had seen. We had discussed across the 2023 run, a big part of the reason we believe in UConn's championship chances was because nobody is great. Yeah, hopefully that does change because college basketball is better when there's multiple great teams and there's multiple great matchups. UConn Purdue in the national championship was actually kind of awesome for college basketball. And I would say even for the two games for UConn before that, Alabama and Illinois, I respected the matchup. You know, I said, all right, I don't think UConn is going to go win this game by a lot because at least it's a somewhat better put together team here where there's a thesis for how they could win. Whereas literally you could not say that before. You could not say that about San Diego State in the Sweet 16 or in the national championship. You could not say that about a lot of the teams that UConn had played previously in the NCAA tournament, the previous, you know, eight games before those. So yeah, maybe college basketball is improving. I mean, hey, Ryan Kalkbrenner is returning for one more year. I don't know any other key retention that we've seen.
You talking about in the Big East or just in general?
Just in general.
The Big East is probably going to send 5 or 6 teams, you know, just
Next year, you
purely
think?
off of
Yeah.
preseason, because Xavier is going to be kind of
Xavier's going to be
sick
better.
again.
Looks like Hopkins is returning to Providence. You know, like, and that was another piece of the Big East is that last year the Big East definitely was affected by injuries. So that league could have been a little bit better. But yeah, I am rooting for other teams to get slightly better because of just for the quality of college basketball. Dan Hurley's a really outspoken critic of the way that college basketball is scheduled and marketed. So maybe that's, you know, phase two for him is as he turns UConn into the juggernaut, he also gets a lot more say in some of the stuff that's happening. Hey, maybe he gets the Coach K treatment, starts coaching USA basketball. Wouldn't that be
Wow.
something incredible? But it's certainly a possibility. I just thought of that just now, but
No, I mean
it's possible.
it's let's get nuts. Like it's time to start thinking about some crazy stuff. And if you want to get nuts, like also have to be realistic about like Hurley may not be here for the extended period that people are thinking, because look at what happened with Billy Donovan the last time a team went back to back, is he jumped to the NBA as quick as he could. And Hurley's been very open and vocal about that. Like, yeah, you know, I kind of like to get a crack at the NBA a little bit
Yeah,
if
of course
things
he
are
would.
re
He's a competitor.
of course he would, right? But you would also trust him to put the foundation in place, to have everything smooth and functional when he leaves. But
Do you remember, by the way, real quick, do you remember what happened with Billy Donovan, actually? Do you remember that saga? He signed immediately, like that offseason, he signed a contract with the Magic, and then he reneged on it. He actually
no,
just,
I didn't
like,
remember that.
I mean, I looked this up because it was, I was thinking, like, what if Dan Hurley starts getting NBA offers this
Oh, he
offseason?
will. He will.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
Well, not
like, what?
maybe not this offseason, but
Well, that's what
next.
I was thinking. Well, if he wins two, I mean, he starts getting on the radar at least because Billy Donovan, that offseason, agreed to terms with the Magic to be their head coach. And then, like, 1 or 2 months later, reneged on it and then doesn't go to the NBA for another, like, 3 or 4 years, something like that.
I mean, shit, LeBron, you want to get nuts? Let's get nuts. Darvin Ham couldn't coach his way out of a
Oh, my
box.
gosh.
And you know LeBron has a history of publicly requesting UConn people, aka Shabazz Napier. So, I mean, yeah, like, look, that's not out of the realm of possibility. But again, you have to have faith in the precedent that has been established is a lot stronger than the previous transition to power from Calhoun to Kevin Ollie.
Yes.
That one didn't have the sample size that Hurley is now working with. And yeah, like I like you articulated it better, but like I think he is seeing of like, okay, this is my like I'm going to market, like I'm going to be the face of college. He is not running from that, I think. And the previous faces of college basketball, whether you want to say Calipari or Krzyzewski or something like that, they didn't have the personality that Hurley has. You know, Calipari's got the savviness and the marketing, sure,
Coach K was a
but
dickhead. You know, he
yeah,
was an
like Coach K
asshole
was
to people.
like yeah, and Hurley isn't, he is a, he is well respected in the ranks. Not that Coach K wasn't, but he just, I don't know,
So Coach K, I mean, like, you heard all these stories about Coach K. There was one story that Deadspin did some tremendous, like, just overall reportage on how much of an a-hole Coach K is. There's a story somewhat recent, like, I want to say, like, 2012, 2014. He calls in the student reporters to his office to yell at them about a mid-season grades column that they did on the team. It's like, and Dan Hurley, maybe in his early years was a little cantankerous with media and maybe would be after a loss still today. He would never do something like that. He gets a silly question in a press conference. He's not going to be like, "Oh, fuck you." He's going to be like, "Oh, ha ha," and not answer it. He's not that
He's
style of
fair.
person.
He's fair. I think if he, just looking at how he treats media, if you ask a fair question, and fair equals tough, he'll answer it. He'll give you an answer.
Yeah, he answers almost everything. And he even answered the Kentucky rumors question after winning the national championship.
Yeah,
He answered
which.
it with a laugh. He did it in the most perfect way imaginable and then said, "Just ask my wife." But yeah, I mean, he's handling that piece of it really well. I hope. Like we discussed last year, I mean, he was coming into these press conferences with so much swagger and so much confidence, and I can only imagine that that doubles in the coming year. Maybe he shows up with, like, a really great chain to Big East Media Days, like a chain with two rings on it or something like
But
that. I
no,
don't know.
but that's not who he that's not who
No,
he is. Like, the biggest difference is, oh, he starts to wear hats a little bit more. Like, I think there is still a lot of like the I'm uncomfortable with the spotlight, but I'm still going to give you my authentic self. You saw him up there on the New York Stock Exchange. He looked stiff as a board. as far as, around all these Wall Street types, he's not gonna pivot into this, oh, you forget where you came from
Of
type person. Like,
course. Of
oh,
course not.
I'm the
Jersey
prom
City,
king.
baby.
Yeah, I'm the prom king now. I'm not gonna, I'm gonna forget about the nerd who helped me, with my math homework type thing. He's gonna bring everybody with him along for the ride. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's insane. I think, yeah, I don't know. I don't even want to like talk about 25 and 26. I had that in my notes of like it's going to be a bloodbath in 25 and 26 because it could very well be a bloodbath next year.
Yeah, we could talk about 25, 26 later. Let's
Or like
we
the defense. Like we do need to talk about like where's the defense coming from this year? But like there is the benefit of the doubt given to the staff now that they will figure it out.
Yeah. Or maybe they just score 130 points a game. There was a funny Hurley quote from the parade where, they talk about the potential for three-peat, and he goes, "Well, look, we won by so much. We don't even need to be as good to win the championship again." So, which is like true, but also funny. But also, yes, like we're discussing, I really do think this is a 2-year ramp that we're approaching. And who knows what to expect for 24, 25. High expectations for 25, 26. But yes, of course, we, the reporters, the analysts, the podcasters, we're ultra focused on the day ahead, one day at a time, one week at a time. I want to just throw one last question at you. I know we wanted to talk NBA. We'll have to do that next week because we've already gone 90 minutes here. But any initial thoughts or impressions on Ahmad Noel that you want to throw out?
Yeah, actually, I'm glad you said that because I had a couple of takes here, that, think of how Jalen Stewart and Solo Ball were this year, where they were role players, brought in. There were no sets run for them, really. That if they got baskets, they were off of broken plays or offensive rebounds or something like that. I see Jaden Ross, Isaiah Abraham, and now Ahmad Noel in that kind of dirty work role to various levels. Like I think Noel will be have the ball in his hands a little bit more. Abraham will be more of like the guard, switch on a couple of guys, and Ross maybe like the change of pace level. But like when you look at De'Ara Mahaney, Ball, Stewart, Sampson, Reed, and McNeely as the core, then I think you can fit in Ross, Abraham, and Noel as like the 10, 15 minutes here and there, depending on game flow, doing those dirty work roles. And that's why I think the Mahaney signing at first was like, oh, like that kind of creates a logjam. No, that takes the pressure off Ahmad Noel. Because coming in as a freshman, no matter how good you are, a freshman at 6 feet, that as a point guard, that's the hardest thing to do. In college basketball is to come in there and make an instant impact. Now the pressure is off to say, come in, handle the ball, play some hard-nosed defense, and get guys into their spots. And I love the concept of Ross and Abraham providing that same level of contributions, adhering to like their various skill sets. And yeah, like the roster looks great when you look at that. Like, yeah, various, you're not sure who will start. I don't want to talk about that. No, nobody gives a shit about who starts in May. But when you look at just like the rotation to the role players of like in the contributions, I think it looks great. Like this is exactly, you don't have to spend the rest of the offseason wondering, oh, are we going to get some, we need some late add. If Caravan stays and you want to bring in a stretch four, sure, fine. But I'm betting on Samson. No, I'm sorry. I'm betting on Jalen Stewart and Solo Ball to average close to double figures next year. You look at their per 40s and their per 100 possessions, they're both in double digits, both around 11 points. Cool. Sign me up for that. Sign me up for Mahaney, probably around the same. Like, I think this could be something where there's one, two, three, four or five guys in double figures next year. No real alpha, except maybe one of the fret, maybe one of Ball, Stewart, or Mahaney, or maybe McNeely. I mean, there is a lot of dudes that are going to average around that 9, 10 point per game level next year, and really has you excited about like how this offense is going to be. I think it's going to be, they're going to be like a top 5 or 10 offense that will kind of struggle defensively at times.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we're talking in May.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, de so defensively, not to get in there, but yeah, obviously you're going to always feel the loss of a 7'3" swatting machine and Steph Castle as well. But yeah, just on that final point on Noel, yeah, I mean, I think I even have slightly higher ambitions for him, even as a freshman. I think he could be like the first point guard off the bench and provide minutes in that way and develop because they need him to. And because that's kind of the vision for someone like that, rather than being an off-ball contributor. So I'm thinking about like Shabazz Napier's freshman year. I'm thinking from a talent perspective, like RJ Cole 2.0. Again, we're talking about 2.0 talent upgrade types of versions of guys. Hasn't been a shorter guard at UConn in a while, but luckily Noel is built. The dude is jacked
Like a
and will
brick
not
shit
be.
house, yeah.
Yeah, he will not be pushed off of his drives when he is going hard to the lane.
Put
So,
Aiden Mahaney on his diet.
yeah, exactly. So we love to see that. And again, I think he's a guy who's set to stay at least probably 3 years, maybe 4, given the fact that he's not, 6'5", 6'7", whatever. But I think we love his Philly toughness. That's something Dan Hurley has noted. And
There's a undersized guard from Philly that has made a long and illustrious NBA career. Kyle Lowry.
Oh, Kyle Lowry. I didn't know he was from Philly.
Yeah, I think he was from Philly.
I thought you were gonna say, I actually had no idea who you were gonna say. So Kyle Lowry, great stuff. That is a really good comp. We tend to be really ambitious with our comparisons here, but I do think that's a fair one. We will do more on the Huskies in the NBA and their prospects next week. Steph Castle has declared for the draft. Alex Caravan's testing the waters. Klingon and Castle are expected to be lottery picks. We've also got Cam Spencer and Tristan Newton on the radar for the second round. They'll all be participating in the combine in the upcoming summer league. So tons of fun to keep an eye out for in the future. That'll be next week's episode. We thank you all for listening. And again, find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.